God, you who loves us but throws us curveballs, you who cherishes us but challenges us, please be with this worshiping community as we search for your life-giving ways in these old and new words. Amen. Okay, so here's the scene. On Friday, Jesus had been crucified at the hands of the Roman authorities and buried in a tomb with a large stone at its entrance. On Sunday morning, a group of women, Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and others, go to the tomb with spices as they had prepared to anoint the body in accordance with Jewish custom. To their shock and amazement, the stone is rolled away, and instead of Jesus, they find two men in dazzling clothes who tell them that Jesus is risen. The women, these first witnesses to the resurrection, run and tell the disciples what they have seen, but they are dismissed and their story is mansplained away as fantasy. Later that day, the scene then shifts to the road to Emmaus, a village 7 miles from Jerusalem, where two disciples are walking, but a figure they do not know recognize approaches them and asks them why they are looking so glum. Do you not know? Have you not heard about what they have done to Jesus of Nazareth? They respond. And they walk and they talk, and the disciples tell of the witnesses of the women, but still they do not recognize the figure walking beside them. As evening approaches, the disciples ask their new companion to eat with them. And so Jesus stays and takes bread in his hands, and he blesses it, and he breaks it, and he gives it to them. And in the blessing and the breaking, his true identity is revealed. And then he is gone, vanished before their eyes. Finally, the scene shifts again. Still that same night, but back in Jerusalem, the disciples are huddled together behind a locked door, confused by the disappearance of Jesus' body, scared that the authorities might come for them next. They do not know what to do. They do not know where to go. The world around them seems scary and dangerous. They feel trapped and isolated, like prisoners chained by their fear. And then, as if by magic, Jesus is there among them. Though through the locked doors he appears, but it is no magic, he assures them. He is no ghost or shadow. Look at my hands and see that it is me, he says. Look at my feet and how I walk, just like you. Oh, and do you have anything here to eat? I'm starving. It's easy to get tied up in knots by the Easter story. It's easy to get tripped up by historicity, whether it really happened in the way described or not. We can try to explain it through cultural analysis of first century Judaism. We can try to justify it through the doctrines of the church formulated and reformulated through the centuries. But something will always be lost in translation. Something will always be lost between witness and explanation. And so our challenge this morning, regardless of what we believe happened or didn't happen, is to stay with the witnesses, to stay with the women at the tomb, to stay with the men on the road, to stay with the disciples behind the locked door, and honor their experience, and believe that it was recorded in this way for a reason, to say something important about the nature of resurrection, the nature of God. Because what we see here in Luke's account is that the physical nature of the resurrected Christ is important. This, of course, exists alongside the metaphysical, which is also important to the story. Jesus' friends don't recognize him. He transports across distance. He materializes through walls. But at the heart of this story is the physicality of Jesus. It's his transformed body, his hands and feet, and what he does with them that is important. He is revealed in the breaking of bread and the eating of fish and the touch of his hands, in the warmth of his smile, in the peace of his presence. He is revealed in the three dimensions of lived experience of his followers. There, huddled away behind the locked doors of fear, Jesus meets his followers where they are. He is revealed as one of them. "Look at my hands and see that it is me." Our current situation here in Ontario means we are spending most of our time these days locked away behind closed doors. It is scary out there right now. The COVID numbers are scary. This third wave is overwhelming our healthcare system. The confusing patchworked restrictions keep coming, limiting our movements and activities. We all need the discipline to continue to do our part until the vaccinations can catch up. But this is undeniably having remarkably harmful effects on us, certainly for those who are sick or are grieving loved ones, but even for those whose encounter with the virus is less direct. The implications on physical and mental health are serious and far-reaching, and the full effects likely won't be known for years. And one thing I'm becoming increasingly concerned about for my kids, for myself, for residents of long-term care homes still locked away in their rooms, for all of us, is the great flattening of the world, the flattening of lived experience into two-dimensional screens of glass and plastic. This, of course, has been the trend for decades, but because of the pandemic, our experience of reality is increasingly being mediated through computers and televisions, phones and tablets, and they don't always work. And this is also not benign because the content of this flattened reality is often controlled by corporations and their profit-driven algorithms that are trying to influence us or distract us or inflame us so that we will spend even more time on their platforms and they will make even more money. Of course, there are also remarkable benefits of technology as tools for connection and engagement and inspiration and learning. We're using several different platforms right now, and we'll continue to do so for the mission of this church. But this can't be all there is. We can't live in a flattened reality all the time. We can't lose the depth of dimension. We can't even lose the dimension of depth. We can't lose the physicality of life on this planet, the richness and texture and vibrancy of the natural world, the remarkable things our hands can do beyond typing, scrolling, like building, planting, like holding and healing. Even in times such as these, we can't be distracted by the forces seeking to capitalize on our fear. We can't be numbed from the ongoing responsibility to each other, to live our lives deeply as witnesses to God's love and active participants in God's good and growing creation. In days such as these, I'm reminded of the allegory of Plato's cave, perhaps you know it. Plato describes a scene where a group of people have lived their whole lives chained to a wall of a cave. They can't even turn their heads. They're prisoners and know nothing beyond the flat wall in front of them. Behind and above them is a light source, a fire. And below that, people who are hidden by a screen hold up figures to the light like hand puppets of animals and people and other objects. Seeing these shadows on the wall, the prisoners assume that what they witness projected in two dimensions in front of them are real animals and people and objects. They have no real world frame of reference, no lived experience of a bird or of a tree or a neighbor. And just as the shadows are easily manipulated, the prisoners too can be easily manipulated by the people behind the screen. There is a danger when things become flattened, when we lose the depth of things. We lose the ability to see things from different perspectives. We become hardened in our beliefs and attitudes, assuming that what we are presented with is the only way things can be. And if we lose the texture and intimacy of physicality, everything becomes abstract. And nothing seems real. And if nothing is real, why would we care? Why would we care about climate change or the fate of grizzly bears or mercury-laden drinking water in grassy narrows? If If we can just swipe past if something makes us feel uncomfortable, why would we do anything about building highways over farmland, or the pillaging of our oceans, or the clear-cutting of old-growth forests, or reconciliation? The conservationist and filmmaker Jacques Cousteau once said, "People protect what they love. People protect what they love, and to love something you must know it deeply and intimately. Loving and knowing, protecting and respecting, they're all wrapped up together." So maybe this should be the lens through which we see the stories in these weeks after Easter Sunday. Remember, it was vital for the early Christian community to claim the physicality of the risen Christ, to claim that the disciples touched his hands and saw him eat. Again, this is not to say that the spiritual realm is not important, but the emphasis on physicality is to affirm that the material world is also important. Matter matters to God. The physical world we live in is important. Our bodies and their weird wonderments are important. All of creation is important to God. Loving and knowing and protecting and respecting, they're all wrapped up together. The story we started months ago back in Christmas continues now into this season of Easter. It is the one great story of the Incarnation. The Incarnation, this Christian witness that is, in Jesus Christ, God became flesh and blood and walked among us. He ate what we eat. He felt what we feel. He wept as we weep. Look at my hands and see that it is me. This is the Christian witness, that we are not alone, that God is with us. This is a truth that transcends empire and evil, pestilence and pandemic. It transcends all attempts of manipulation. It is a truth that transcends even death. Through resurrection, we see that incarnation is not a one-and-done moment confined to history or the pages of the Bible. Incarnation is ongoing. It always points towards the realness of God in our midst. The Incarnation can never be flattened. It is a full-bodied invitation into the fullness of life here in our flesh and blood reality. It is a call into the depth and richness and responsibility of life together here on this planet. Now, it's true. Because of COVID, we spend much more of our time behind locked doors these days. Maybe our reality right now that our lives feel confined, our movements restricted. But let's be clear. We only become prisoners to our circumstance if we lose the ability to distinguish from what is real from what is shadow. If things become abstract to the point where we lose the connection between loving and knowing, protecting and respecting. Even in this time of COVID, we are called to live our lives and live our faith in three dimensions with all our senses in these weird and wonderful bodies. Because God calls all of creation not just good, but very good. The stars in the sky, the creatures of the earth, the birds of the air, the rich soil, the vast oceans, the dappled forests, and the people of God's own heart, are all very good. And so later today, we offer a new way to live our faith in three dimensions in our own corners of creation. At 2 p.m. this afternoon, we will be launching Tattle Creek Wild Church. We will start out on Zoom, a remarkable tool that we've been using a lot of this year for time of introduction and prayer. And then we will be encouraged to go out and wander outdoors. Following safety guidelines, of course, we will wander on our own for 30 minutes. This could be in your own backyard, in a park in your neighborhood, or just a stroll down the street to simply encounter God and the beauty and bounty of creation. The cry of a red-winged blackbird, the budding green of a dogwood tree, a flash of color from a daffodil, to feel the breeze in our faces, the soil in our hands, and to be reminded that life all life is holy. To be reminded of our covenant to care and to share. To be reminded that through the ongoing incarnation enabled by resurrection, Christ's hands are now our hands. And we are gifted with the freedom to use them as we will. To clench in rage or to open in peace. To harm or to heal or to steal. The choice is ours. As Ben will soon sing for us, with the devil's pitchfork in our hands, we turn the field to foreign lands. We mine the gulf, we dig it deeper. We free the serpent from its reaper. And yet, these are the hands that fix the bones, the ones that build with sticks and stones. These are the hands that plant the tree. These are the ones that pull the newborn baby free. Jesus says, "Look at my hands and see that it is me." May this be true in us as well.